can at it from two different ways. I've been studying social media systems. I used to work for Yahoo for a few years now, so I was interested in those systems where people share information online and share content online in social settings. And Jeff came into it from the angle of studying relations between people, how they use different means of communication to manage relationships and strong and weak ties. Now, when we look at Twitter and Facebook and other systems like that, I think we both identified, we call them in the paper social awareness streams, and we identified that there is a very significant shift in how people communicate that's represented in those systems. So if you look at, you know, the progression from the letter to the telephone to email, then, you know, that would perhaps offer different affordances altogether from the telephone, to now these social awareness streams, I think there is a significant yet another significant shift where people, you know, finally or I don't know if finally is the right word, but people now have an opportunity to maintain some kind of a passive awareness of what other people are doing in their lives, or other people that they care about, or other people that might share information that they care about. And that didn't exist before. It's a significant change in the way people can communicate. Because, you know, previously, if I wanted to, you know, if something happened in my life that I wanted to share, I had to individually address every single person that I thought might care. And now I can just say something about it on Twitter, and, you know, perhaps, you know, some people would care, will follow. Those who don't care will not follow. Some people may or may not care, and they may or may not see it and comment on it. So it offers essentially a new set of communication tools and information tools to our to, you know, manage our relationships, to maintain our communities, to even inform our society. So that's why we think these platforms are really interesting to look at and study.
And Professor Bose, you guys essentially came up with that there are two types of people out there, informers and, I don't remember what the other
Me
ones
formers.
Are. Me-formers. What are these people?
Well, it's an interesting thing. We came to that dichotomy, you know, partly by reading through a bunch of messages that people had already posted and coming up with their own categorizations. So myself, Moore, and the other author, Chewei Lei. So we did that. We came up with actually 9 different categories, and they included things like me now messages, like I'm having lunch now or I'm driving now, as well as just basic information like check out this link to this interesting blog post, and, you know, other things like if you retweet, which means that you post something that someone else just posted. So we had like 9 different categories, and we wanted to know, you know, are there different types of users that are going to use some categories more than others? So we did what's called a cluster analysis, which basically breaks people off into groups, and it tries to make groups of people that are kind of similar to each other. And, you know, the cluster analysis can create, you know, as many groups as there are people, essentially. So, you know, there's different ways of deciding how many groups, but we noticed there's really strong differences between just 2 groups, people who mostly share information, but they might also have some other kinds of tweets, like things like they're doing right now. And then the other group was people who mostly tweet about themselves. So we came to that categorization through this process, and that's essentially why we decided to call them me-formers and informers.
And there is crossover, like you just illustrated. Just because you might be considered a me-former doesn't mean you won't occasionally retweet somebody else or post another link. And same as
exactly.
Those people who post links all the time, maybe every once in a while say, you know, and I had a lovely dessert for lunch.
Exactly, that's right. So, yeah, I mean, people who are posting information, sure, there may be a few who are only posting information, but, you know, a majority of the ones who are posting information, most of it's information, and then, you know, I had this interesting thing for lunch, or check out this other message that someone else sent, isn't that interesting, you know, that kind of thing.
Moore, it strikes me that there is a enterprise connection to your survey, because a lot of agencies, at least federal agencies, are now sort of saying, okay, well, we're putting out a lot of information. They're sort of the informer organization, but they're also looking at the possibility of actually having this be a conversation, so like some organizations have done with actually a Comcast, for example, will actually track Twitter and find out if people are saying nasty things to them, and then they'll reach out to you and try and help you solve those kinds of problems. Government's looking at a similar kind of thing. Is there something in your study, in your findings, that speak to larger organizations that are jumping into this social networking world?
And in fact, we were just discussing it this week. Our study that we just published only looked at individuals. So we took we specifically chose 350 people who are regular people, not companies or organizations. But the implications, you know, what that means and how people manage relationships and follow and unfollow and choose who to follow on Twitter are interesting, and I don't think we have a strong answer to that yet. For example, one of our questions is whether or not people who are me-formers will actually turn other users away or make other users stop following them because maybe they're talking about themselves too much. We want to look at the data. We have data that will allow us to look at that question. Now, that's a question we can ask in respect of, you know, people and other people, but we can also ask that same question about people and organizations, right? How can organizations create their, let's say, persona online, and how do people buy that? And, you know, it could be different things. It could be whether they're me-forming or informing, but it could also be the languages they use, the speed of the response, the tone that they use in their messages. So I think there are many different factors that will influence the relationships that are created between, you know, corporates, organizations, and brands, and users in those systems. We don't have those answers quite yet, but we hope to look at them in the future.
Jeff, there is a lot of folks out there. This is such a brave new world. And, I mean, Twitter's been around for, what, 3 years now or something? But really, it's been in the last, like, 18 months that everyone sort of jumped into this pool. And the other aspect of this that I really find is some people feel like they have to read absolutely every message, every person they follow. And then there's some people who sort of treat it like it's almost like the clouds, and they sort of catch streams and feel like important things will get retweeted and will eventually get back to them. They don't have to read every single message that's sent out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, again, we don't have data that looks exactly at that issue, but most of my other research, for example, on email use, on the use of mobile phones in Japan by young people, all of this literature, you know, is really coming to a consensus that although certainly technology is really important because it allows us to do things that we couldn't do before, our own individual dispositions really shape how we use that technology. So I would suspect that people that are always feeling obligated and always wanting to keep up with what's being, you know, said on Twitter are people who are really social, who really want to be on top of things that are happening in their personal networks with their friends, their families, their colleagues. And the people who aren't really into it, you know, who sort of casually look at it once in a while, probably are not really disposed in that kind of way. So, you know, in their everyday lives, they may not be into getting the latest gossip or figuring out what's going on with their friends and family. They're just sort of more relaxed in that way socially.
And looking at the ways different organizations and, for our audience, different federal agencies can use this to their advantage, I'm thinking about the social awareness streams and the nature of the content and that real-time stream of information, as you guys describe it. How would you say if an agency or someone with an agency came to you and said, yeah, I want to try this for my organization, how can I make this work best for me? What sort of advice would you give them?
So there are two questions here. One, you're right. The social awareness stream means that you can either a participant or witness and analyze the activity that's going on in those systems. And I am in the Library and Information Science Department, and I look at those communication systems as new repositories of information that were not previously available. Again, so this is something that reflects the, we can call it the global consciousness, or even, you know, the real-time web, it was called in some places, that gives us a lot of information on what's going on in the world, what are people thinking, what are people reacting to, what are people doing. So partly the study that we're doing right now is used we're going to use it to gain understanding about the activity so we can create better information systems on top of Twitter, on top of Facebook, to improve access to data of various kinds. So that's, I think that's an exciting question. And that will differ, you know, depending on your goals as an organization, as a corporate, what do you want to learn about. And I think we're just starting to explore what these systems will make available. And the other part is how to participate and how corporations take part and what works well and what doesn't work well as a, in this system as a communication tool, which I think, again, this is kind of a, so far has been mostly an art that, you know, starts forming, and some people claim that they have an understanding of what's working and what's not. And I don't know that this has been studied scientifically quite yet, and we are hoping to give answers to that as well in the future.
So are you both on Twitter?
Well, that's an interesting story.
Well, we've got
interesting
time.
Stories.
Let's sit back and get comfortable, have a little cup of coffee, and do tell.
That's not that interesting. Maybe tea, not coffee. So we both started out with private accounts on Twitter. I guess, in a sense, we're both MeFormers. And Jeff could speak for himself in a second, but I was really, when I started on Twitter, I didn't really know what to do there, you know, what to tell, and why should I tell other people that I'm eating tuna for lunch. And but then I started using it to basically communicate important things that happened to me, well, at least what I think is important, to friends and family and other people that I know. And that was very much in the spirit of me forming. And after a while, I realized that a lot of people are getting on the platform and trying to and connecting with me, where I don't really want to share, you know, my private life, or they might not care at all. I mean, I'm sure a lot of them don't care. So after we did this study, I actually realized that I'm a MeFormer, and I opened another public account. So private accounts are accounts that can only be accessed if I give permission to another user to access my data.
Mm-hmm.
But a public account, anyone can read and anyone can subscribe to without my permission. So I opened the private account after we did this research. I called it the Informor, with M-O-R at the end. And there, I, you know, I share information about our research that perhaps my student can follow, my colleagues can follow, about our research, about other people's research that's relevant, about things that are relevant to my field. So I think on Twitter, I'm now a MeFormer and Informer in two different identities almost.
Do the two categories ever end up in the same place at the same time?
Yeah, especially when I'm talking about my own research.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, for example, when I'm going to say, oh, here's an interview about us in Federal Radio, I might post that to the people that I know and care about, as well as, you know, the people who are just looking for information about their research.
Jeff, what's been your experience?
I think personal disposition really shapes how people use technology and the extent to which they use it. And, you know, my disposition is kind of like, I really, really like thinking about things and studying them. And part of that is getting involved and actually using them, but part of that is also sort of standing back and trying to make sense of it more as more of a detached viewer kind of way. So I definitely use it partly just so I can get that experience, partly because it is interesting and engaging, but I'm not a heavy user for sure.
Yeah, I think there are two interesting points. First, we're not sure yet how youth will adapt this technology and work it into their lives, because that will determine how this technology sustain and work in the following few years. So that, I think that's the adoption success of the technologies, and really, if we're going to witness a shift in how people communicate from those more active addressee-based systems to passive systems. I think looking at what younger people do will actually determine that for the few years to follow. And the second, just to make one point stronger about the MeFormer, and obviously a lot of the media coverage of this talked about, you know, considered MeForming to be perhaps a bad thing or has negative connotation. And
sounds egocentric, like, okay, it's all about me, enough about me, what do you think about me kind of thing.
Right, exactly. But while, of course, it has its own implications, it's also used in many ways for people to actually perform some positive, or at least to gain some positive outcomes, maybe not knowingly, but, you know, something like time maintenance to close family or even more remote friends and remote ties is an important outcome of such activity. And Facebook has been shown to contribute to, for example, what's called bridging social capital for people that use it more heavily, have more of this type of social capital that allows them to make weak ties to other people. So me forming, yes, might sound a little negative, but actually has some real-world benefit in many cases now.